Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of vaccinations
Welcome
and your
Blog
rights
Talk
in
Radio.
The U.S.
If you desire
a show
to speak
co-hosted
to the host,
by HWC
press
founder
at
and
any time, and the host
Debbie
will
Brock,
be notified that
and
there
attorney
is a caller
law,
in queue.
Alan Phillips.
Otherwise, please hold and
you'll
be able
to
listen to the show.
And call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go.
Debbie herself to talk to you about homeopathy, which is just a marvelous way that we can learn to empower ourselves and take back more control over our own health. To help ourselves or work with who would need it with more skilled homeopaths in a very gentle but often very effective way of treating health care problems and issues. I am vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. And again, thank you for being with us today. Pleasure to have you. I'm going to talk about an issue first off here that comes up periodically, and I have seen this in the almost 20 years that I've been looking personally and then later professionally into the vaccine controversy. This is an issue that comes up periodically, and I have probably talked about it in the past, but I think it's worth discussing at least briefly again because it does come up. I see from time to time information circulate within the alternative vaccine community where someone is promoting and suggesting that people use one version or another of what is sometimes referred to as a doctor liability form. And what the idea is that you should take this form to your doctor and tell them to sign it. And there are different variations on the form, but these doctor liability forms, as they are often called, are forms which asks a doctor to assume responsibility for anything that goes wrong with a person or their child from a vaccine. You know, your doctor tells you to vaccinate, and you say, fine, you sign this form saying that if anything goes wrong, you'll pay for it. And that'll show this doctor, that will reveal that the doctor really doesn't think the vaccines are safe because the doctor won't sign it. And then the doctor will back off and leave you alone and won't pressure you to vaccinate. That's the theory. That's the idea. I'm going to take a few minutes this afternoon to explain to you why I think, as a general proposition, this is actually not a good thing to do, potentially even a bad thing to do. Now, I want to be fair and sort of give both sides of the issue at least a little bit, although, of course, I'll focus on my own concerns. But I did talk to someone on at least one occasion who said that they had taken in one of these forms to a doctor, and they actually got a civil, intelligent discussion about the problems with vaccines out of doing that. And the doctor was even perhaps receptive or complimentary. The doctor actually learned some things from the parent. And you know, many times doctors are, in fact, the vast majority of the time, as from my understanding and what people report to me, doctors don't, they're just reporting what they've been told. They don't individually go out and all research the subject and come to their own independent conclusions. They're following orders. They are soldiers on the front lines for the pharmaceutical industry, whether wittingly or unwittingly, and they're just putting forth what they're told. You know, they have gone through enormous efforts to become members of the medical club and have all the money and prestige that goes with that. And you don't get that or keep that if you challenge the system that gives it to you. And so they're not going to challenge that system. Sure, you're going to give me this money and prestige. All I have to do is, you know, report this information, and which, among other things, means pushing vaccines. They don't go out and research it themselves, with some wonderful and noted exceptions, but as a general rule, medical doctors are not doing that. They're just reporting what they've been told. So if you find one who's receptive to your discussion, more power to you. It's really, really hard to find that, and that's the exception to the rule. But I did want to say that it does happen. In fact, when my oldest child was very, very young, I took my research into a family doctor. I would never try this again knowing what I know now, but this particular doctor was one that I thought could be receptive, and he actually was. And he took an hour of his time to sit down with me and listen to me report to him what I had found in my research. And while he didn't agree with my position on vaccines, he actually complimented me at the end of the hour on my research, and I really had taken the trouble to look into this. And then he sent me a bill for $150 for taking his time. He didn't give me any medical services. He didn't give me any medical opinions. He sat there and listened to me educate him and charged me $150 to do that. So even if you can find someone who will listen to you, you know, they're going to milk it one way or another for all it's worth. That's my experience. Here, though, to get back on focus, are some of the problems with taking a doctor liability form into a doctor and asking them to sign it. Point number one. Doctors will never sign anything that is asking them to assume liability. They have enough liability as it is. There are doctors whose liability insurance premiums, just the premiums for their liability insurance, are more than what you or I earn in our businesses, more than our income. That's the cost of their liability insurance. Are they going to voluntarily take on even more liability than they already have? Of course not. You know what? If you have vaccines that you or your child are mandated to get, state law says you have to get them, a doctor's signing or failing to sign a liability form is not going to change the legal requirement. So you're not going to get off the hook by going into a doctor and say, well, if you think vaccines are so great, put your money where your mouth is. Sign this form saying you're willing to take responsibility. They don't have to sign it. They're not going to sign it. And probably they're just going to get pissed off at you for challenging their authority or coming in such an arrogant position. Now, this part of the conversation is about how the liability form is pointless, but it gets potentially much worse than that. So listen carefully to these next couple of concepts here, because this is important stuff. There's only three places legally as a parent that you can be in terms of your children's vaccines. You are either getting your children the vaccines that the law says they have to have, or place number one, place number two, or you are exercising an exemption in the law that's available. Exemptions, for example, for vaccines required of infants and toddlers or for school enrollment. Those are all state laws, for the most part state laws with any of the states, you know, federal law, I guess, in U.S. territories. But nonetheless, it's law that's specific to each state or territory. And the exemptions and the procedures for exercising them are going to be different everywhere. So you just have to look at the laws in your state or territory. You need to look at the statutes and health department regulations. Usually you have to look at both to get the whole story on what are the laws and what are the procedures. And that won't even tell you what all your rights are, but that'll tell you what the options are and what the procedures are. So you're either doing the vaccines or you're doing an exemption, or place number three, you're not doing either one of those first two. Folks, if you're not doing either one of those first two, you are probably not in compliance with the law. There's only two legal options, the vaccines or an exemption, with regard to those vaccines that are mandated by law. Now, for example, most states don't mandate the flu vaccine. That's just a recommended vaccine. So I'm talking for right now for the mandatory vaccines, the ones required by law. So you're either doing them or an exemption, or you're out of compliance with the law. Now, if somebody in that third category, they haven't done the vaccines, they have not gone through whatever procedural steps they have to exercise an exemption. If somebody's in that third category and they walk into a doctor's office with one of these liability forms, they are inviting an investigation by Child Protective Services for medically neglecting their child. Being abusive or neglective, the specific definitions will vary from state to state, but something like that is a potential charge if you're out of compliance with the law. See, somebody can't be properly accused of abuse or neglect unless they're doing something unlawful. And if you're not in compliance with the law with vaccines, you are therefore at risk. Now, you need to understand that doctors and other professionals are required by law to report suspected cases of abuse and neglect. You could find a sympathetic doctor if you were lucky to find the one in the million that would be sympathetic, and they're still required to report you if they suspect that you're neglecting or abusing your child. And if you come in and you're not in compliance with the law, that's a pretty good case of suspected neglect, neglecting to provide legally required medical treatment or exercise exemption. So the risk here is enormous. And those people who are promoting this idea that you should, just take in one of these forms, they'll never sign that, then they won't pressure you to get the vaccines. You know, that the goal here really isn't to see if you can get them to engage in an educational discussion about vaccines, even though that might be a nice thing if it actually happened. The likelihood with most doctors, based on what I have experienced in my own life, what I hear over and over again from clients and others from all over the country, is that doctors are, on the whole, aggressively supportive of vaccines. Not just politely, respectfully supportive, they are aggressively supportive. And when you don't follow their aggressive support of vaccines, when you don't just shut up and do what you're told, you irritate them, you anger them. They're the expert and you're not listening to them. There are a lot of big egos in the medical world, folks, and I don't mean this as any disrespect. I have some friends who are doctors that I think are some of the most wonderful people in the universe, so this is not a one-size-fits-all, but I hear this over and over again from medical professionals themselves, the couple of hundred or so that I've had as clients in the last 3 years. I hear the same thing over and over again from all of them about this very aggressive stance that the hospitals and medical authorities, and then when I'm talking to parents and patients, the medical doctors individually themselves, far more often than not, very aggressively supportive of vaccination. So that's what you need to be prepared for. If you're going to go in and challenge a doctor's authority, you can expect the doctor to be less than happy about that. Or if you go in with the intent of having a civil discussion about the pros and cons and you've done your research and you want the doctor to look at it, good luck, because there's a good chance that that's going to be perceived as a challenge to their authority. They're too busy to look at it even if they wanted to. If you're not in compliance with the law, they are required by law, probably in most if not all states, to report suspected cases of the abuse and neglect, and you end up being sucked into the Child Protective Services system. And once somebody in that system starts a report, a whole procedure has to be followed and a whole series of steps have to be gone through. If they see what they believe the social services, Child Protective Services, state workers, if they see evidence of abuse and neglect, they're going to conduct an investigation. And while it seems to me that not vaccinating is not a reasonable basis for removing a child, the CPS folks have the authority to do that. And I have heard at least one or two horror stories some years back, one in particular where a mother had serious problems. I think she had actually lost one or even two children to vaccines. I don't remember the exact story. And she said, "I'm not vaccinating the third child." And they came and took her child from her. There are some dysfunctionally aggressive individuals or some dysfunction in the system that even take an individual. Sometimes there are dysfunctions that are really more about the system in place than they are about any individual, but people follow the rules within the system. So I recommend not using these doctor liability forms. They sound terrific. Aha, no doctor will ever sign one of those. It's a great idea, so let's enjoy the idea, but let's not actually ever take one into a doctor, or at least that's my suggestion. Unless you are clear that you're in compliance with the law, you understand that you're risking an adversarial interaction, and you feel that there's some important reason to take that risk anyway, more power to you, but I just think very seldom is it really a good thing to do. Well, let me move on to another topic here. I'm going to pick on two or three kind of shorter, smaller issues. Almost want to say a couple of these are sort of pet peeves of mine, but what I'm really want to do here is just bring a little clarification. Again, in the vaccine alternative community, I have over the years seen lots of people talking about the different words concerning vaccinations. They, of course, are called vaccines or vaccinations. They're called immunizations. They're called inoculations. I know in Britain and Australia, they refer to them. I guess it's sort of a slang as jabs. One of the things that I see people talk about with some degree of frequency, off and on from time to time, is that, well, I don't believe that vaccines really immunize, so I'm not going to call them immunizations. I'm going to call them vaccines or call them something else. And you know what? There is, in my personal research on the subject, and I've confirmed this with at least one medical doctor very recently, there is some substantial evidence to support the proposition that vaccines really don't immunize. And from a medical point of view, then, to say, to call them immunizations arguably is improper. But I want to give another side, if you will, to that story, and I'm not here to argue who's right or wrong on the issue. I'm here just to add a little clarity, because I think there's validity to this idea that immunizations is an improper term. You know, I hear the phrase, and people in the alternative vaccine community hear over and over again the phrase, vaccine-preventable disease. You know, anybody who is not vaccinated with the recommended or required vaccine-preventable, people who aren't vaccinated are at risk of getting these vaccine-preventable diseases. And I keep wanting to say, well, you know, based on my research, there really aren't any vaccine-preventable diseases, because vaccines, in fact, vaccines can make you more susceptible to disease. They can suppress the immune system, and do. There's evidence to support that in the medical literature. Just recently saw an article talking about a study that showed that adults who had gotten the flu vaccine 2 years in a row actually were more susceptible to the flu vaccine, not less. The vaccine had a negative effect. So let's make sure we go out and vaccinate all the healthcare workers, you know, at least 2 years in a row, so that we can make sure they're more vulnerable and more of a risk to their patients. I mean, the whole thing is crazy. But anyway, let me come back to the original issue here. The issue I'm talking about here is the use of words vaccine and immunization. And are these really interchangeable words? And a lot of people say, I'm not going to call them immunizations because they don't impart immunity, certainly with not any guarantee. Because even the CDC says that 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't develop immunity. And so at least for those kids, even by the CDC's mainstream definition of immunity, meaning the vaccine creates an antibody response, they're not immunizations for those kids. Those kids aren't immunized. They're vaccinated, but they don't become immune, so they're not immunized. And so I just really want to start off by saying I understand the controversy and the concern there and why people object to the word immunizations. But to the extent that we're talking about legal issues, let's say exemptions and waivers, I have found everywhere that I've looked that the terms are interchangeable. So I'm not trying to say anybody's right or wrong. It's just a question of what context are you talking about. So I just want to underscore, if anyone has a question about this, when you're talking with regard to legal purposes, exercising an exemption or waiver, for example, or what are your rights or so forth, I find that the words vaccine and immunization are interchangeable, that you can use either one or both, and you're not going to lose an exemption because you said vaccine instead of immunization or the other way around, for example, or no one's going to criticize a legal argument because somebody said vaccine instead of immunization or something like that. Ultimately, as it pertains to law, statutes, state statutes, federal statutes, routinely include definitions of the important terms that they use. And so if you had to split hairs on something for legal purposes, then you go to the definitions in the statutes and you see how are they defining the word immunization for purposes of their own statutes. How does your state do that? Look at your state statutes. How does the federal government do that? Look at the federal government's statutes. So for legal purposes, you go to the definitions in the appropriate statutes. Or sometimes words can be defined, I guess, in legal precedent and certainly sometimes in health department regulations for our purposes here of health issues. So look for the legal definitions. But ultimately, I think it's not an issue for people to spend time arguing about whether or not immunization or vaccination is an appropriate word or not. Just use the language that suits your context and need at the time, and you'll be fine. Let's see, where are we? We got a few more minutes here before we bring in Debbie to change topics to some of the news of the day. There's another issue that I've seen some debate or discussion about in alternative vaccine circles over the years, and I want to hopefully shed some light and clarity on this. There are people who are fond of saying that vaccines really aren't required because there are exemptions. And so that means they're not required. Now, I've analyzed this and frankly overanalyzed this question over the years, and the last time that this came up very recently for me, I took it a step further in my analysis or over-analysis, and if it's over-analysis, you know, you're welcome to think that or say that, and I won't take any offense. Sometimes I do over-analyze things, but I want to talk about this because I think it's important, because on one level it's just semantics, and who cares whether you say they're mandated or not because there are exemptions. But on another level, to say that they're not required because there are exemptions is not only strictly speaking incorrect, but it is potentially misleading in a way that could get people into trouble. And that's really my concern. I'm not worried about splitting hairs over technical accuracy unless there is a potential negative consequence from failing to do that. And this is my concern on this issue. So my position as a lawyer talking about legal definitions is that, yes, vaccines are required. They're required in all 50 states and all U.S. territories for school enrollment. They're required by immigrants. They're required by military members and their families. There are, depending on how you count, over a dozen contexts and subcontexts in which vaccines absolutely are required, and that is the starting point. The next question is, in terms of legal analysis and being strictly correct, are there exceptions of any kind, and what are they and who can qualify and so forth? What are the particulars about all that? But the starting place is they're required. And the reason I think it's a problem to turn it the other way around, and the reason that I think it's not just a question of semantics, is that if somebody hears this idea that there are exemptions and so vaccines really aren't required, may be prone to being a little bit complacent about figuring out exactly how you exercise the exemption. You don't get an exception. I mean, by definition, an exemption or waiver is an exception to the rule, and the starting place is the rule, and the rule here, the legal requirement is you know, vaccines are mandated. That's the rule. Is there an exception to the rule? In every single place where they are mandated, there are one or more exceptions, but you know what? Not everybody qualifies for an exception in every situation. So for some people, they're mandated and there isn't a way out. If you don't qualify for any of the one or more exemptions that are available in your particular situation, there's not even a question of whether or not there's an exception to the rule. There's a requirement that you don't have any option about. It's a practical matter. I mean, there's always something you can do, but in terms of legal out, if you don't qualify for one of the available exemptions, they are not only required, they're required absolutely. And there are many states, 30 of them or more, with regard to school exemptions, for example, where not everybody can qualify for an exemption. And in the military and immigration and territories where there are no philosophical exemptions, just like the 30 states I was referring to there, there are people who don't and can't qualify for an exemption. So to say that vaccines really aren't mandated because they are exemptions is wrong, and it's wrong in a way that if we keep saying that, that people can be misled and find themselves in difficult situations. So it could be semantics on one level. On a technical legal level, it's not correct. On a practical level, people can be set up for having more problems than they would otherwise have with that. Well, let me see here. You are listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. And, you know, I don't say this often enough. The acronym there is the acronym is VYRUS, virus. I've got to credit my brilliant and wonderful co-host, Debbie Brook, for this one. We thought it was wonderful. Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., we can call that virus for short. And you are listening to Vaccine Rights Attorney on Blog Talk Radio for the freedomizerradio.com, homeopathyworldcommunity.com radio shows coming to you every Thursday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We're going to go to break here, and we will be back with you, and I'll be back with my co-host Debbie Brook in just a few minutes, but thank you for being with us today. And the first, I'm going to run an ad first, frankly, here, talking about my ebook. And I want to let folks know that I have just recently revised my ebook, The Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, available at vaccinerights.com. And it now is updated to reflect all the things I've learned in the last couple of years since the last update. And it's a really inexpensive way to get detailed information that's not available anywhere else to tell you about your rights to refuse vaccines. So we'll see you on the other side of break, folks. Please stay with us.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. Annabella's and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We're going to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
We are back. You are listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. And now, if all goes according to plan, joining me, my wonderful, wonderful co-host, Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community at homeopathyworldcommunity.com. Debbie, how are you doing this afternoon?
Yes, I am here. I am with you. I am listening in to your brilliancy. You have really hit on some important topics that folks need answers to. They need your expert advice because you are dealing with it day in and day out for a number of decades now, and have really honed in on what happens in particular situations and the best strategy for a person to take, and that's where you can guide people. So
well, thank
that
you so
is
much,
wonderful.
Debbie. That's very kind of you. You know, you never know it all, and God willing, I will keep learning, but I certainly have focused on issues of vaccination for the last couple of decades now, and the last 10 years of that as an attorney, looking more and more closely at the legal issues. And my goal is to protect people or to offer protection for them, to help them to better understand what's going on in the world with vaccines, but also how to take very practical steps to protect themselves legally from vaccines if that's their choice. And I certainly do my best, and I hope to get better and better at it as I have more and more experience and continue to research it. But boy, Debbie, some really interesting things, as always, have gone on in the news about vaccines around the U.S. and around the world. I want to extend an invitation to you if there is a particular point that you'd like to take off with here to start this next segment of the show, or I'm happy to jump in with some things I have. But let me hand the baton to you first and tell me where you'd like to go with that.
Okay. If you don't mind, I will just start with some philosophy. And I'm wondering if the Freedomizer website is up and running, because for some reason, maybe it is the browser that I'm using. It does not say that it is enabled. But otherwise, hopefully people are able to listen on the Blog Talk Radio show, both Blog Talk Radio, Freedomizer Radio, and Blog Talk Radio Homeopathy World Community. So I'm going to try Chrome to check that one out and see what's up with my browser.
I had difficulty pulling it up as well, so I think there must be a problem there with the system. So, but we'll keep on going because we know the folks at Homeopathy World.
It's archived and recorded. It's archived and recorded for anybody who does need it. Okay, so I'm going to be actually talking about just a little bit of philosophy, theory, spirit. This is a quote. Maybe you know FDR. He said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," at the first inaugural address. for his presidency. And that was in 1933. The Depression had reached its depths, and Roosevelt's first inaugural address outlined how he hoped the government he would help to govern and remind Americans that the nation's common difficulties, so bringing the people together, concerned only material things. In other words, it had a very spiritual, higher kind of a message going on when he went through this speech that he gave. And then I only came upon that because my message today is based on letters and talks of Rav Menachem Schneerson, who says, "The pain is real, the fear is not. The pain is real because we are not in our place. Nothing is in its place. It is called exile, and so there is pain. It is that angst of being in the wrong place that lifts us higher beyond this place. The fear is not real, because no matter where we are, our God is still with us. The only thing we have to fear is that we may no longer feel the pain." So you can see how the reflection of the words of Schneerson, you can hear it echoing in FDR. And it's talking about how we have our own personal perceptions of what is happening in our world and with us individually, how we deal and cope with pain, and why we do have pain. I had a very long talk the other day about how we perceive pain and the way the brain is able to overcome the pains that we feel. So I gave an example. If you have a muscular problem and you're having great pains, let's say you have MS or fibromyalgia or whatever it is, and you have great pain, it's your perception of that pain. Now, let's say you're an athlete and you're trying to achieve a goal and you're working out really hard, you're climbing a mountain or you're running laps, and you have muscular pain. However, for you, that pain is a positive thing. It might hurt, but you're able to cope with it a lot better simply because you have a goal and an achievement in mind. So this is very amorphous and philosophical, but I think I want people to just think about it, where their fear is coming from when the government tells us something that they're going to control, they're going to take care of us, they're going to provide vaccines, and never you mind, you don't have to think about it, you don't have to investigate, you don't have to worry about who's in charge and who has the scientific data. You're just going to listen and do whatever we say. Or do you really have a pain that you have to reach up higher and make some waves? Say something about what is happening in your world. And that's kind of what I want to talk about. I wanted to get off on this philosophy. And so knowing that if you're morally strong and if you're in a place of exile, that you're going to feel the pain, and that's a good thing. You want to feel the pain if you're not connected, if you're not doing the right thing, if you're not true to yourself. You're going to feel the pain. There you go.
Debbie, this was absolutely brilliant. I'm going to just, if I may, add a couple of comments to kind of tie it in to the vaccine issue specifically, because, you know, what you have said is just wonderful. This is sage advice for life in a much broader sense than our comparatively narrow focus on vaccines, which, not to diminish the vaccine issue, it's an enormous issue. But there are some things we can take away from the vaccine issue that will apply to life in a broader sense or to other issues and so forth, and vice versa, some generalities that maybe have application to life in general that we can look at in, with regard to the vaccine issue specifically. So the vaccine issue, as we talk about all the time and will continue to talk about until the serious underlying dysfunctions within our systems, medical and political and governmental systems in the world, are healed, and probably years after reflecting back on how things used to be, as a way of helping to ensure that once we heal all of this, we don't return to where we came from, the unhealed dysfunctional systems that we now currently experience. And we talk over and over again about things like how the pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in criminal behavior, and they have criminal fines in the hundreds of millions and even $1 billion criminal fines, and about how there's tons of evidence in the published peer-reviewed medical literature that shows the problems with vaccines, about how the federal government pays out $100 million a year to vaccine victims and their families and puts on their website, here is how many dollars we paid out for each vaccine for each year. You can go look at it split up, you know, and see just how bad each vaccine is compared to the other one, for example. And we know that most of the adverse events are never even reported. So all this information that is overwhelming. And I've talked in the past about how I think one of the biggest, if maybe not the biggest, barrier to healing and resolving these underlying systemic corruption and dysfunction issues is partly difficult because of people's psychological worldview that prevents them from even being able to look at the possibility, because if the anti-vaccine people are right about what's going on, we are in a very dark time, in a dark world, a very disturbing world where people in high-level positions and positions of influence and authority and power and control can actually behave the way they do. These are enormously difficult things to wrap our minds around, to even contemplate from a purely psychological point of view. And we've got to have ways to cope with this if we're going to be able to stay with these issues over the long term, just to hold that, so to speak, as we go forward, but to be able to get past any psychological resistance to looking objectively at what's truly going on. There's no way that any normal person could look at this and not experience some fear. Oh my gosh, what is really happening? What's our government doing? Where is all of this going? How do I keep my job without getting vaccinated? How do I keep my child safe and healthy in school without getting vaccinated, and so forth? All these different kinds of things. So there are what is sometimes referred to as rational fears, understandable fears. But if we have some framework, some context, some perspective within which to hold these things that enables us to keep calm, to hold on to our personal balance, if you will, to hold on to some objectivity, to keep us anchored and grounded. Of course, many ways and things that people could do, and the answer could be different for everybody, of course, but absolutely relevant, important, and wonderful for you to talk in terms and about ideas that hopefully will help us and our listeners to be able to go forward as we continue ongoing to explore and investigate this issue and report new events after new events after new events that are further revealing these very serious problems in the pharmaceutical industry and the state and federal government agencies and the World Health Organization and so forth. I mean, it's, you know, clearly international problems. So we got to have techniques, we got to have coping mechanisms, we got to have things we can do to help us keep our balance, stay grounded as we go forward with all this, because it's an immensely complex task, subject with immensely complex goals that we must maintain our focus and balance if we're going to be effective both at educating ourselves and at taking productive steps and productive action to help heal this problem.
Okay. Well, if you'd like, I will talk about a particular article in the news coming from Times of Zambia.
I think this is on your website, on pandemicresponseproject.com, about are vaccines causing more harm than good. It was published on July 14th, and today is July 18th. The number of vaccines are constantly increasing for children and adults, and we need to take a closer look at what are the outcomes of giving children between 22 and 62 vaccines by the age of 5 or 6. And it also says pets. There's a great big group of anti-vaccine veterinarians who are out there showing the dysplasia, the autoimmune diseases, the hypothyroidism, and all the other things that are happening to animals as well, because they are getting annual boosters, which are totally unnecessary based upon the data and other veterinarians out there. I want to preface again, this show is opinion. This show is information and entertainment. So if you want to verify any of this, you have to do your own searches and investigation. And if you need any legal or health advice or guidance or consultation, then you have to go and find the experts and make a connection there. We are not doing that over the air. So we're just providing opinion and reading news. So Barbara Lo Fisher, who's the president of the National Vaccine Information Center, a consumer group based in Virginia, USA, and they're putting up poster boards across the country now, claims that vaccines are responsible for the increasing number of children and adults who suffer this autoimmune diseases and neurological disorders, hyperactivity, learning disability, asthma, chronic fatigue, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, and seizure disorders. She calls for studies to monitor the long-term effects of mass vaccination. I don't think anyone has ever done that in terms of we gather a lot about short-term between the time of injection, maybe a month or two later, but along the line, years down the road, the accumulation of these adjuvants and heavy metals and preservatives and whatnot, they do have a cumulative effect upon the body. She says no one can deny the dangers of vaccines. The measles, mumps, rubella, German measles, polio, vaccines, they all contain live but weakened viruses. Although the health officials tell you that polio has been wiped out in the United States since 1979, they fail to mention that all recorded cases of polio since that time are caused by the polio vaccine. That means you get the vaccine and the disease is spread through the fecal matter or contamination from the person who is carrying that weakened live virus at the time. So we might be questioning whether we still need to be giving the polio vaccines to en masse to entire populations. So that is one little tidbit from this article. Let me get to the heavy part. The heavy part is vaccine contamination. There's a problem with contamination that has plagued vaccine makers during World War II. A yellow fever vaccine manufactured with human blood serum was unknowingly contaminated with hepatitis virus and given to the military. As a result, more than 50,000 cases of serum hepatitis broke out among American troops injected with the vaccine. That was in World War II. In 1960, it was discovered that polio vaccines manufactured in monkey kidney tissues between 1955 and 63 were contaminated with a monkey virus. Although this virus causes cancer in experimental animals, health authorities insist it does not cause problems in humans. Okay, I'll leave it at that. And I know I talked a long time and you like me to keep it short. So go ahead.
Well, Debbie, those are important issues, and you shared them quite clearly and quite well. Thank you for every moment that you spent on it.
I tried to talk fast.
you and I share, I think, this trait where we are able to articulate well, for the most part, our concerns, but some of these issues just have so many facets and there's depth to them. And sometimes it's just hard to say three or four words or sentences about something and be done with the issue. But I'm going to actually try to do that, famous last words, because I often pick up, you know, I always wonder, how am I going to fill the time? I only have this many things to say. And then when the time is gone, I've said, you know, a quarter of what I thought I was going to finish and have time left over. So I certainly am prone to verbosity. Would that maybe be the word?
That's the word.
Anyway.
Okay, let's fill in the time.
Yes. Well, here is something that I just want to touch on real briefly, just to prove that I can. There is a recent article saying the first baby has now been vaccinated with Hexion in Europe. Now, this is an innovative, as it's referred to, 6-in-1 pediatric vaccine. So it has diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough, which the traditional DTP vaccines have. It has hepatitis B, poliomyelitis or polio, and then the Haemophilus influenza type B. And previously, now I have heard of a 5-in-1 vaccine, the pentavalent vaccine, and I'm not sure, it's probably got 5 of these same 6 ones. It may be, I don't know for sure, it might be that it was the same as this without the polio, I'm guessing. But in any case, now I've got a 6-in-1. Now people are real concerned in the alternative vaccine community anyway. They feel like the more vaccines you add, the more risk there is in some respects. Now, if you have all that in one shot, then there's less of the toxic additives than if you broke that up into multiple shots, because each shot would have its own batch of adjuvants and preservatives and so forth. So maybe in one sense it's safer to do it that way, but then there's a whole separate concern. Well, how does the body respond to all of these different antigens being injected all at once? And certainly some people in the alternative community at least would be saying that they're nervous about that or concerned about that. So there may be some research that tells us that there are some increased risks by adding in more vaccines. Well, there is published research from the last year or two that found that there was a correlation between the number of vaccines individual countries administer and the infant mortality rate. And here in the U.S., where we administer more vaccines than any other country in the world, in fact, twice as much as the average of 30 other Western nations, we are way out in the lead in terms of the number of vaccines we administer. And yet we have a third world infant mortality rate. I mean, if vaccines are so wonderful, and especially for infants and children, we ought to be right up there at the top since we're giving the most vaccines, and we're not. And that should be huge alarm bells for anyone paying attention. So, let me move on to another point, even though I actually went farther with that than I expected when I started. Debbie, this is a real interesting article here about employees with GlaxoSmithKline in China being arrested. Now, I keep saying over and over again on this show and the other shows I do that the pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in criminal behavior, and I talk about the huge fines they get as an example of that. What we're talking about here in this particular article may be an isolated instance with regard to the specific set of facts, and I'll give a quick summary in a moment. At least 30 employees arrested so far in a scandal with Glaxo in China. But this is just, in the general sense, this is just more of the same. There is something inherent to this industry or people at this level in business generally. I can't pinpoint it exactly. Although, Debbie, I did see a fascinating internet video recently that was reporting on a major university's study of the behavior of wealthy people compared to non-wealthy people. And they looked at this in many different contexts. And what they found in very short, quick summary was that wealthy people are several times more likely than non-wealthy people on average. There are going to be exceptions everywhere, of course. But in general, on average, wealthy people several times more likely than non-wealthy people, the poor people, to lie, cheat, steal, present things. There's just this sort of we're above the rules mentality that has now been scientifically documented in formal studies of wealthy people compared to the rest of us. And perhaps this plays a role in the sort of thing that we keep seeing over and over again, where the pharmaceutical industry keeps getting caught with their pants down, breaking criminal laws. Okay, this particular article posted a couple of weeks ago, I guess at this point, week and a half, 10 days, something like that. It's a bribery and tax evasion scandal unfolding in China, and so far at the time of this article had already involved the arrest of 30 different people. Now, this includes as many as 6 executives who, according to this article, are under house arrest. It includes Glaxo's legal counsel in China, and then they say one UK national, although Reuters reports that no UK nationals have been detained. So the details are sort of unfolding, at least as the time they're publishing this particular article. But China's Ministry of Public Security issued a statement accusing Glaxo of involvement in a huge scheme and serious economic crimes to raise drug prices.
What does that mean?
Bribing,
what does that mean?
Well, to raise drug prices by bribing doctors and government officials in 3 cities. There were Glaxo offices in one city that were raided by police. They're also suspected of being involved in a form of tax evasion having to do with falsely issuing what I'll read the phrase from the article. I don't pretend to know exactly what it means, but here's what it says. By falsely issuing exclusive value-added tax invoices and colluding with travel agencies to issue false invoices for, quote, project sponsorships, unquote. Now, they have links in the article to what they're referring to here as a backstory. Probably get more details on that. But the general concept here is bribery and tax evasion scandal. That's the sort of quick 3-word summary phrase.
And we're talking about Glaxo higher-up administrators in the company involved with the China's government? Is that what it is?
6 executives with the corporation are under house arrest.
With the corporation,
the corporate executives, and which includes their legal counsel. See, I told you we shouldn't trust lawyers. But,
yeah.
So, you know, this is serious stuff, and I don't feel a need. I mean, if you want to explore this any further, Debbie, please by all means say so. But for the moment, I just wanted to bring to people's attention that there continue to be ongoing problems, serious legal problems and criminal problems in the pharmaceutical industry. And I say it is a purely simple, if not simplistic, philosophical point, one of many, but just this one. Should anyone, and this is a rhetorical question, but feel free to answer it anyway if you want, Debbie, should anyone ever be required absolutely to take a product from an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior? You know, I mean,
I think
the question speaks for itself. Debbie, believe it
right.
or not,
and
we
and
have
it always
actually...
come, it always comes. I'm sorry. It always
no,
seems to come back to the topic of trustworthiness. And in America now, censorship of information. But it's saying, you know, in China is constantly in the news for all sorts of industry-wide corruption, whether it is additives that are toxic to milk or other kinds of products that, for instance, garlic. I only look for locally grown garlic. I mean, everything is produced very inexpensively, but you don't know what kind of filler it is. It may not be the product that you want. And if you're talking about drugs that you're going to put into your body to supposedly heal disease or save lives, and you're working with
less than trustworthy people or industry, then you have to question. So these are drugs that are made in China. Are these same drugs sold to Americans, or are they only sold to the people in the country of which they're manufactured? Do we know that?
Yeah. Well, Glaxo, of course, is an international corporation. I believe they're based in Britain. All of the major pharmaceuticals are international corporations who are going to be looking to produce products the least expensive price and sell them for the biggest price, like any other business or industry. I'm not saying that as a negative thing in and of itself, but one reason to set up shop in China is probably because they can get quality employees a lot cheaper. And they're going to sell the products anywhere they can find a market for it, I'm sure, although I don't have any specific information, so, you know, you raise a good point. But, Debbie, we've actually rolled a little past break time here.
Okay.
Let me, if I may please, butt in here for a couple of minutes, and we'll go to break and come back, because I want to make sure we have time to get to our last break in time to give you your full time for the end there, because I don't want anybody to miss anything that you have to say at the end of our show today. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck. And we are on Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. At least usually. Looks like they're having some website problems today. And, of course, Homeopathy World Community Radio, which you can find from Homeopathy World Community. And these shows are both simulcast with and through Blog Talk Radio, and you can find these shows on Blog Talk Radio, or this show, at blogtalkradio.com. You can go to blogtalkradio.com and go to Freedomizer Radio or Homeopathy World Community and find the shows and listen live or to the archives there. So we hope you'll stay with us for the next couple of minutes here as we go to break. We'll be back on the other side. Lots more to talk about, folks, so don't go away.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself for someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, So go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com. Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called SolarVay. And SolarVay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have SolarVay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has SolarVay. You sign up enough people, and SolarVay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, SolaVei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, solavay.com/freedomizer.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Debbie, you have anywhere else you want to go here, or shall I jump in? What would you like to do here?
How about if we just go ahead and do some bulleted items, and then with if time allows, we can do a little bit more in-depth. So from your website, pandemicresponseproject.com, you have vaccines benefits outweigh risks implies children injured by vaccines are expendable. And, you know, a lot of people, this is dealing with the Jenny McCarthy. So I think I'm going to put this on the back burner because this is something that we can talk about like in way more in depth as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let me just real quick, Debbie, if I may, please, excuse me for jumping in here. I just want to repeat that title because, you know, I actually had this on my list today, and all I really wanted to say about it was just this title because the issue is so multifaceted, inherently complex, but every once in a while there's just this little soundbite that just speaks for itself. Like I keep saying, for example, no one should ever be required to take a product from an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior. This is another one of those sound bites, and I thought it was wonderful. I'm just going to repeat it, if I may, because I really want people to sort of just sort of hear this and chew on it for just a few seconds. They're talking about this claim that vaccines benefits outweigh risks, that phrase mm-hmm. implies that children who are injured by vaccines are expendable. We don't even have to get into challenging the initial assumption to see that the assumption is inherently flawed in that it carries with it an implication that is just unconscionable. So anyway, forgive mm-hmm. me, but thank you for letting me kind of jump in on that. And
that's
please
good.
Please go forward.
That's good. We will talk more in depth about that. The second thing that you have is about a giant cover-up. A shocking and unforgettable CDC mortality and morbidity weekly report, and which says September 24, 1982. So it's a couple of years back, a couple of decades ago. Current trends update in acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, in the United States. And so between June 1, 1981 and September 15, 1982, the CDC received reports of 593 cases of acquired immune deficiency AIDS with 243 cases of death. And I think that not very many people really hear some of these statistics, and we need to kind of look at them and what's going on with them and what does this mean to people who are getting these vaccines if these are potential outcomes. It kind of follows right along with what you were just talking about. The incidence of AIDS by date of diagnosis has roughly doubled every half year since the second half of 1979. So it's all about reading the data, reading the charts, and making conclusions. I think that's what it's about.
Yeah. Well, just very, very quick comment here. This is an article from a medical doctor, Dr. Yazbak. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but in Massachusetts. And he did just publish this article a few days ago, so I want to just clarify for people that this is a current article, but he is looking as far back as the late 70s and early 80s with the information that he's talking about here. Excellent. It's a lengthy article, and it'd be really hard to cover it in depth unless we made that the focus of a show, which is, I guess, a hypothetical possibility. But I would encourage folks to go to pandemicresponseproject.com to the news page and look for this article called The Giant Cover-Up. It's worth a few minutes of your time to read this. And again, coming from a medical doctor who knows what he's talking about. But please continue.
Okay, Debbie. The next thing is on greenmedinfo.com, of which you are an author, and I am also an author, not of this particular article. This is U.S. military Monsanto targeting GMO activists and independent scientists, new investigation alleges. That's the title. And we can expound that also, I think, to the Jenny McCarthy, and that is something that we can do in a few minutes. Basically, we have a lot of concern about what's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about tracking. Today, the privacy issue is most high priority in everyone's mind, as far as I'm concerned, who is listening into your or can jump into your telephone calls, get your emails, gather data upon you, market to you, create a file about you, and then attack you. So this is what it's about. Another
real quick comment on this. This is from the largest daily newspaper in Germany, who is alleging that Monsanto, the U.S. military, and the U.S. government have colluded to track and disrupt anti-GMO activists and independent scientists who study the adverse effects of genetically modified food. And this is just such a disturbing concept. If there turns out to be truth to it, I presume the largest daily newspaper in Germany wouldn't make these kind of allegations without some kind of substance to back it up, but I haven't personally, of course, investigated this. But it's just a really disturbing kind of allegation. Now, we've seen this, of course, in the vaccine arena as well. People who dare to speak out about the truth when that truth involves putting a light or trying to put a light on corruption. People who engage willingly and knowingly in corruption don't do so with a good faith intent that if they get caught, they'll just own up to it and, oh, darn it, you caught me. Oh, well. You know, that's not how it works. And so they are, of course, heavily invested in the corrupt system, the status quo, and they will take steps to defend and protect that. But how far will they go? Well, we're finding out with the latest NSA scandals, and now we're seeing another version of that with overseas folks reporting on Monsanto, the U.S. military, U.S. government, working to prevent people from shining a light on the corruption. So this is, you know, this is a battle that goes
outright
on, not just in vaccines.
Outright censorship.
Well,
outright censorship. Yeah.
I think it's worse
than
just censorship. It's organized attack on the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I mean, it is truly frightening for individuals who are willing to risk their reputation, their careers, their livelihoods, their families, death threats, all kinds of things happen to individuals who speak out against the mainstream, against the governing body. And this is to think that the governments in all of these countries are colluding together to hamper this information from coming out or hamper people from gathering. And we've talked about that right here in North Carolina, where every Monday, Moral Monday, hundreds of people are rounded up and put in jail just for speaking their truth. And this is very frightening in America.
Well, it's frightening anywhere, but even more so in a country that supposedly was founded on principles of fairness that would necessarily, at least by the initial intention, exclude this sort of behavior from happening at all. And yet here we see it happening and being uncovered. Well, it's great that it's being exposed, but the fact that it occurs makes you wonder, among other things, how many times has this been going on and where else is it going on that it hasn't been found yet? You know, just a real crude analogy here. I had used to have a neighbor who had lost his driver's license because he got caught drunk driving too many times. And I asked him once, how many times were you drunk driving before you got caught? He said, mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know, probably about 100. Now, you know, that's not a figure to take to any other context, but my point in the more general sense is this. If you assume that the only time something bad happens is when it gets caught, or if you assume, mm-hmm. for example, that everything that goes wrong gets caught and exposed, you're living in a dream world. You know, we live in a world where many things go wrong and some of them get caught. And some of the ones that get caught get punished, you know, and some of the ones who are punished will stop after that. But there are many, many others who never get caught or don't get caught for a long time, others who don't get punished even when they are caught for one reason or another, didn't get read their Miranda rights or some technicality, others who get punished and don't learn from that and will go out and repeat the behavior. So many complexities here.
Okay, so the next issue is Japan stops cancer vaccines as World Health Organization put in sharp focus. This is a really big issue because the American vaccine industry seems to keep a blind eye to what happens around the world in different countries and the responses to vaccine injury that other countries make. So here's one. Japanese government has withdrawn administration of vaccines against the HPV, the human papillomavirus, in Kyoto, as the World Health Organization faces stinging criticism. Japan has cited adverse effects, including infertility, long-term pain, numbness, and paralysis. The vaccines Gardasil and Cervarix were being given to the schoolgirls ages 11 to 14 in Kyoto. Four strains of the HPV out of more than 100 types are associated with cervical cancer, although there has never been conclusive proof of a link between HPV infection and the development of cervical cancer. So these vaccines are being given without definitive proof. In effect, the Japanese Ministry of Health says quite categorically that it has no faith in the Gardasil and Cervarix. In contrast, Kenya's Ministry of Health says the same HPV vaccines are safe and effective. So different countries have different conclusions. This is, again, two different companies, Britain's GlaxoSmithKline, and by the way, on that initial China affair, I have put a link to the GlaxoSmithKline response about the allegations on the Homeopathy World Community website. Gardasil is manufactured by Merck Sharp and Dohme, or Merck and Company, while Cervarix is Britain's GlaxoSmithKline. So that is something that's going on there. And what American governance is going to do about looking and reviewing this facts, I don't know, but it's something that everybody should pay attention to.
We certainly should. And I tell you, I am surprised, given the political climate surrounding vaccines generally, but at the same time, of course, delighted to see that somebody spoke out. I've been hearing information about some of the things you just pointed out for years, that the HPV vaccine has never been proven to prevent cancer, that it appears to be, by all available data at this point, by far the most reactive vaccine, causing the most death and disability of any vaccines. It still amazes me that people in the general population are completely unaware that vaccines come with a risk of injury and death. And I think if every young woman or parent of a girl, young woman, going into a doctor's office to get or consider an HPV vaccine, we're told, and we want to make sure you understand that vaccines injure and kill sometimes, would you still like to get this vaccine that has never been proven to prevent cervical cancer? I think if they were giving those facts, that we'd find so many fewer adverse reactions because nobody would be getting the vaccines in the first place. But Merck, the company that makes the Gardasil vaccine, just lowered the cost of the vaccine by 95% so that they can administer this vaccine to people throughout the third world. And when you consider...
Well, it's a big guinea pig. It's a great big test. Because
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't think it's a test. I mean, it is in the sense of, we have no idea
if it's going to
actually prevent any cervical cancer. But it's worse than that, Debbie, and I'm going to go out on a limb here. Remember, this is the industry we were just talking about that routinely engages in criminal behavior to maximize their profits. Why would such an industry drop their price of anything by 95%?
They want to dump it. I don't know.
Well,
how does a manufacturer think about lowering the? It could be like what is a cost cutter? You go into the grocery store and the bananas are 22 cents a pound because they want you to come in and buy everything in the store, or you have a ton of utility.
Yeah, I don't think we've reached the point where nobody. I don't think we've reached the point where nobody wants them and they're just trying to cut their losses, although I suppose that's an interesting factor. I hadn't thought about that. But for a vaccine that is clearly carries a risk of injury and death more so than any of the other vaccines from what I can tell at this point, that has not been proven to do what it's being marketed to do, and this is, were they gouging us by charging us 95% more than they needed to? Is this a company Is this a company who just turned over a new leaf and now they really are a humanitarian organization and not a for-profit company who's willing to violate criminal laws to maximize their profits? I seriously doubt that they are. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say what I think they're actually doing, but I want to raise the rhetorical question, what is it that they are doing? This is not a humanitarian effort. That is pretty clear from the history and looking at this in context. It's hypothetically possible I'm wrong, but I am very, very skeptical of that possibility. So I just want to leave this with a hypothetical, and you could rephrase it in one slightly different way. What is it that is in these vaccines that they want in the bodies of every third world person who would be of vaccination age? And this would include all young women and girls and boys, because we don't want boys to get cervical cancer either. But no, there is some validity to the idea that this is a sexually transmitted disease that we're talking about, although it can be transmitted other ways, according to at least some medical doctors. But they want to vaccinate all boys and girls in the third world and probably on up through some the earlier years of adult life as well. What is it that's in these vaccines that they want in the bodies of all of these people in the third world? And I'll just leave it as a rhetorical question there, and let's move on. We're getting close. Just a reminder, Debbie, we're getting close to another break time here.
Okay.
So let's push on. Can I jump in with one issue that I wanted to mention?
Go.
There's an article. I'll read the title here. It says, Autism Epidemic Linked to Epidemic of Vaccine-Induced Diabetes. Autism Epidemic Linked to Epidemic of Vaccine-Induced Diabetes. Now, this comes from a medical researcher, a gentleman by the name of Bart Klassen, a medical doctor. He's with Klassen Immunotherapies Incorporated. And I saw information from Dr. Klassen many years ago talking about how he had done studies showing that vaccines cause type 1, I think, diabetes in children. And I've even heard anecdotally, I had someone talking to me from a a nurse from a hospital in Washington State a few years ago saying that they had a child who had been immunized and had developed type 1 diabetes as a result of the immunization, and she's asked the doctor, should I report this? Because there's a federal law that requires them to report any suspected adverse event to the federal adverse event reporting system. And what actually happened was that the doctors threatened to fire her if she didn't keep her mouth shut. And no, they're not going to report anything. And this is an anecdotal story, an isolated instance, but I don't believe for a second that it's truly an isolated instance in terms of the industry as a whole and the way that vaccine injuries and death are dealt with. Because while there's federal law requiring doctors to report suspected abuses, there's also been congressional testimony that medical students are taught not to report vaccine adverse events. So there's tremendous peer pressure directly contrary to federal law, and there's no enforcement mechanism in the federal law that would provide for any sort of punishment or even feedback to doctors who don't follow the federal law. So it's a toothless law, and the culture within the profession says, no, you don't report these, and so they don't get reported near in any level near the actual occurrence of the events. But this is taking previous research to a new step, because not only do vaccines cause diabetes in children, we know that. That's been demonstrated by research years ago. Now he's gone another step to say that there is a connection between the vaccine-induced diabetes and the autism epidemic. And this is a Wall Street Journal publication. Very interesting to me to see this in a mainstream publication, see how long it stays on the internet. And this is, once again, I mean, there are dozens of studies that directly or indirectly connect vaccines to autism, but this, again, is just another study, once again, showing us that link that we've seen over and over again in other studies. So.
Right. The link that we're finding is between our immune system, our proper organ functioning, and the assault by what are in the vaccines, bypassing the natural immune system. So I think we need to go to a break, and then we'll be back.
Yep. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brooke and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Stay with us. We've got another half an hour with Debbie Brooke talking to you about homeopathy, and this is something that can help you to further your own understanding and education about the wonderful benefits of homeopathy. And Debbie, I tell you, she is one of the people to do that with, so you don't want to miss this last half hour. So please stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
When tyranny rears its ugly head, will you bow and serve, or will you stand and fight?
Hi, everybody. This is Barack Obama. Who gets this hunger?
Everybody here wants the pie. We want to grow the pie, and then we want to fight for the pie.
When freedom is threatened, will you turn a blind eye, or will you sound the alarm?
The private sector is doing fine.
Hey folks, this is The Mouth, host of The Last Voice for Liberty Network. Tune in Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 Central for your ultimate dose of liberty right here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
What can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
How's it going, Freedomizers? This is Ferdinand. Join me on the No Bull Zone every Monday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We talk about everything from local to national issues, how to be free, and even throw in some health talks. Call in to chat or suggest a topic. That's the No Bull Zone every Monday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. East Coast Time, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, Freedomists, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Hey there, everyone. This is Chrissy Featherstone, the host of the new show, Real Talk USA, on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is a seriously but yet funny show. Topics will range from current events to psychological factors in America from the scientific approach, and this will be happening every Sunday. We have musical artists that will also come on, and I love banter from the listeners. The show will also offer and feature listener choice topics every third Sunday. So call in to 347-324-3704 or join us in the chat room at freedomizerradio.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Ron from Ron's Media Matrix on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Be sure to catch my show broadcast here every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you're listening in another part of the world, that's 1800 to 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. We're here covering breaking world news, current geopolitical trends, keeping you up to date on the latest science and technology, along with interviewing a wide range of guests, versed in a variety of special topics, and that's not all. Freedomizer Radio broadcasts 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, with other talk show hosts that cover a wide variety of topics, including health, current events, emergency preparations, spiritual interests, and much, much more. So be sure to stay tuned and at www.freedomizerradio.com. That's www.freedomizerradio.com. And if you're away from your home computer, you can always listen to us on your cell phone by calling 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. And thanks for listening.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Well, we're back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. I'm going to turn it over to Debbie Bruck to finish out the show, the last half hour in our usual format where we spend some time with Debbie learning about and discussing issues with homeopathy. We're here for a two-hour segment every Thursday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 10 a.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific Time. And I'm going to sign off now and turn this over to Debbie. Debbie, take it away.
All right. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our listeners. I know that there's some kind of a glitch on Freedomizer Radio for today, but I have placed the Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. That is up, and you can chat there. And you can also, you can probably do the chat on Freedomizer Radio too, but I'm not on there right now. I'm just working the dashboard. And here is another introduction to something at a higher level, and it says, who is rich? One who is satisfied with his lot, as it is written. If you eat of toil of your hands, fortunate are you, how good it is for you. And this is a theme that I've been talking about recently on my shows, on the Health In Show, Nissan Communications, every Monday at 11, and also on the Blog Talk Radio shows, which are all archived if you go to Homeopathy World Community. And that is the importance of the individual's ability to become independent and to function to their highest ability on their own naturally, and to work and put in that time and effort to accomplish and succeed. And with that, you are feeling self-confident, self-assured, better about yourself, and you can cope better. Less things will bother you. Little things won't bother you. Even in relationships, you'll be able to let go of irritations and annoyances because you have created your world, you have built up yourself, you have built up your immunity.
basically. And that is one of the aspects of healing and the immune system that has not been comprehended exactly by the traditional, mainstream, conventional medical community. And that is the need for not only individuals, but organisms and our cellular structures to function properly on their own. Unless you're in a dire situation and you need a shot of insulin, you need something, you have scurvy and you need a shot of vitamin C, or maybe just eat some citrus fruits, unless you're in a situation where you need that extra outer force support, you should be living naturally. And that's a quote from Greg Glaser, our California constitutional lawyer who comes on once a month on this show. So again, who is rich? One who is satisfied with his lot, as it is written, if you eat of toil of your hands, fortunate are you. How good it is for you. And that comes from a quote, the Ethics of the Fathers 4:1. And they were wise sages. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about hepatitis A, B, and C, because we are injecting little newborns as soon as they are born with one of these vaccines, hepatitis B. And it is for preventing a contagious disease for sexual activity. I don't think that your little newborn is going to be active right away. And these shots only last for 5 years, supposedly. If they're effective, they will last for 5 years, and then they would have to get another shot every 5 years. So you got to think about that. Think, if you're a parent, what is the most logical thing that you're going to do? And also, it's the health of the liver. Does the body need an extraneous force put on it to help it function properly, or can the body learn, be educated, conditioned through its environment to boost its own immune system, which it has done through the millennia of evolution with the environment, with the bacteria, with the viruses. You know, we're all carrying these bacteria and viruses within our body on our mucous membranes all the time. They're even learning that these bacteria have a specific function to protect us from disease. That is their function. And if we go in there with antibiotics or other drugs and wipe out the protective mechanism that we have evolved to live with throughout these millennia, it's questionable. And scientists and physicians are now looking at this. And I pray to God that they are going to gear and direct themselves and turn the path into understanding more about immunity and living organisms. So this information that I'm going to talk about, hepatitis A, comes from the book Vaccine-Free Prevention and Treatment of Infectious Contagious Disease with Homeopathy by Kate Birch, homeopath. And this manual is a hefty book. It's about 455 pages long, something like that. It has all the different contagious diseases within it. It is available for anybody who wants to read up and understand a little bit about disease and how homeopathy can be applied. She also has a book called The Solution, Homeoprophylaxis, the Vaccine Alternative, which you would see if you go to homeopathyworldcommunity.com. It's on the right-hand column. Click that and learn more about it. She has created a program of homeopathic prophylaxis based on decades of work from Dr. Isaac Golden, that helps children and adults build their immunity. Now, hepatitis A is caused by the hepatitis A virus, and this disease can present in epidemics or in individual cases. It's spread by the oral fecal route from contaminated water or food, especially seafood. And this is the same route that we know the polio vaccine is spread, and all cases of polio today are caused by the polio vaccine through this mechanism, through this vector of contamination. This hepatitis A virus is primarily affecting children and young adults and is found in environments which there are poor sanitation and overcrowding, like in daycare centers, schools, hospitals, and other types of institutions. It is a self-limiting acute disease with acute and complete recovery 95% of the time. Okay, so there is your risk benefit ratio. 95% of the time, an individual is going to get over hepatitis A on their own. And with something like homeoprophylaxis or homeopathic remedies or other energetic or nutritional, dietary, and practical means, you could probably even increase that. In some cases, it causes severe hepatitis, which is inflammation of the liver. So this is an important organ that we really need to clean out toxins in the body. When this happens, when there is severe inflammation of the liver, hepatitis A can result in a rapid death. This disease seems to be less severe in young people than in those that are older. Infants and children rarely show any symptoms and often go undetected. However, despite the absence of symptoms, the virus is still present and sheds through their stools, making these children carriers for months. So you can think about that. If we are injecting live weakened virus, and I'm not sure whether I'm assuming this is a live weakened virus, that means that when they go to the bathroom and if they're not cleaning themselves properly or they're in a group situation like a daycare, this is a place where hepatitis A can spread. Once a person is exposed, the incubation period can last 14 to 50 days. The initial onset of symptoms includes fever, loss of appetite, vomiting, headache, abdominal pain, occasional diarrhea, general weakness, and uneasiness. There may also be a very slight yellowing of the eyes. And remember that yellowing of the eyes is connected to the liver. Things like the bilirubin when a baby is first born, that is the problem. They have jaundice. And immediately there are a number of homeopathic remedies that come to mind if you're well-versed in homeopathy to support the liver function. After 5 to 10 days, the stools become harder and clay-colored. The urine is dark and foamy and contains some salts and traces of albumin protein. There is systemic jaundice, yellowing of the skin, and a raise in temperature with a slow pulse. If the condition worsens, the liver and spleen become enlarged. With the enlarged liver is an intense pruritus develops, which is that itching without any eruption. So you're not going to see a rash. There will be an increase in temperature, chill, headache, nosebleeds, and other hemorrhages. Urine is scanty and has excess urea. This condition may last from 2 to 3 weeks, and recovery will begin with a change in urine, lighter in color and greater in quantity. You can see that there is a prodromal, there's a different stages of the disease, and that you have to really have a caretaker, somebody support the individual through these stages, through the number of weeks of recovery. Extreme cases are always followed by a long convalescence and great emaciation. The disease is most infectious before the start of jaundice, in up to 1 week after the jaundice has begun. Fatigue, fever, anorexia, extreme lack of appetite with generalized body aching can be prolonged and last for weeks or can have relapsing episodes for several months. It does not sound like a very pleasant disease to get. It's always recommended to keep sanitary conditions and wash your hands thoroughly after you've shaken hands with other people, touched doorknobs, shared glasses, gone into group situations like this, or before eating. Now we're moving on to hepatitis B. In hepatitis B is much more serious a state of disease and has longer lasting consequences than hepatitis A. This type of hepatitis is caused by a double-shelled virus called
hepatitis B virus, HBV, formerly called Dane particle. Traditionally, it was believed that hepatitis B was only transmitted through contact with contaminated blood and blood products, such as contaminated needles or transfusions. It is now known that the virus can also be transmitted via other bodily fluids, like tears. Don't let somebody cry on your shoulders if they've got hepatitis B, saliva, and semen, which qualifies it to be a sexually transmitted disease. So this is passed to others through homosexual and heterosexual activities. In addition to this, it can be passed from mother to child through pregnancy and birth. Whereas in hepatitis B, where the virus is usually eliminated from the body when the jaundice appears, hepatitis B can persist in bodily fluids for years and even for a lifetime if it is not treated. Persons who are carriers of this disease, hepatitis B, are not only a risk for others, but they pose a threat to themselves as they may develop chronic hepatitis, liver cirrhosis, or cancer of the liver. The greatest risk of exposure to hepatitis B is from commercial blood banks and in hospital settings. Just as we know MRSA, antibiotic-resistant streptococcus, also is more prevalent in hospital settings. So this can be quite frightening, is it not, to hear about what can happen with contagious disease. And this goes back to initial reading that I had at the beginning of the show. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And that's because should we be fearing all of these contagious diseases and getting injections? Or should we be building up our immunity to prevent us from being weakened to be susceptible to these diseases? Are we supposed to take other kinds of precautions, washing our food properly if it's been touched by fecal matter? These are the things that we have to be concerned about. Symptoms can vary with hepatitis B and range from being completely asymptomatic to jaundiced, with joint pain, a rash, an increased risk of internal bleeding owing to the delay of the clotting mechanism of the blood. And that we think about vitamin K, do we not? The onset of hepatitis B is more insidious and less abrupt than for the hepatitis A virus, but shares many of the symptoms with differing degrees of intensity. Contraction of hepatitis B can open a susceptibility to more serious chronic liver disease later in life, which I just mentioned, concerning cirrhosis of the liver and also cancer. Now we move on to hepatitis C. There are now identified at least 6 viruses known to be present in chronic liver disease: hepatitis A, B, C, D, E, and G. It's a whole staff. It's a whole notes on the scale, which each vary in their severity and characteristics. Clinically, they are very difficult to distinguish. For simplification, this discussion is limited to hepatitis C. It is a disease of the liver, again, caused by hepatitis C virus, HCV. The other one was HBV, and the first one was HAV. It is a contagious viral disease that usually leads to serious permanent liver damage, and in many cases, death. Transmission of the hepatitis C virus is through blood-to-blood contact with an infected person, whether or not the person is showing symptoms of the disease. So therefore, a person could possibly look perfectly innocent, perfectly healthy, but be a carrier of this disease. The most way of transmission is obviously through needle sharing from if you're a drug user, or through needle sticks in hospital work-related environments, from blood transfusions, the same as hepatitis B, or from a mother to her baby during childbirth. So we have to be careful about sanitary conditions in the hospital and not reusing needles also. The disease usually develops 1 to 3 months after exposure. Susceptibility to hepatitis C is increased if there is a history of hepatitis B. So there we have that issue again of susceptibility, a weakened organism. Hepatitis C does not follow the normal pattern of infectious disease with a prodromal period and active sickness followed by convalescence. Hepatitis C is a long-term chronic illness that the immune system is unable to overcome without holistic treatment. So we mentioned at the beginning, hepatitis A is 95% complete recovery, self-limiting acute disease. Hepatitis B can last for years, but hepatitis C needs definitely some holistic treatment. At the onset of contracting the virus, 80% of the people infected show no signs and no symptoms. The first symptoms are relatively mild unless the disease has caused significant damage to the liver. In all cases, there is some degree of swelling of the liver. The most common early symptom is fatigue. And, you know, people can have fatigue for so many reasons: overwork, not insomnia, not getting sleep, depression, all kinds of reasons. So if this is going on and you don't even know it for months at a time, it means that you have to kind of get tested, I suppose, to see if the fatigue is a more deep-seated reason. There might be mild fever with muscle and joint aches. The disease will progress over several months to years to include nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, and vague abdominal pain. As the disease progresses and the liver becomes more damaged, there will be jaundice, dark urine, abdominal swelling, cirrhosis of the liver, scarring and hardening, leading to liver failure and eventually coma. It may take 20 years from the initial infection to develop significant liver damage. Statistics of the long-term effects of this chronic infection are as follows. 55 to 85% of infected persons develop chronic infection. So it means that you're weakened. If your liver is weakened, it cannot function properly, so you're more prone to infection. 70% of chronically infected persons develop liver disease. 1 to 5% of infected persons may die of the disease. Hepatitis C is the leading indication for liver transplant. Okay, so we have only a couple of minutes to mention vaccination and treatment. There are plenty of conventional methods of treatment, immunoglobulin injections, lots and lots of bed rest, probably lots of fluids, having people care for you. The vaccine, there is a vaccine that contains the actual virus, and this is considered non-infectious. Passive immunity can be acquired through the injected immune serum globulin. Vaccination is recommended for all persons who are at high risk, such as nurses and doctors in contact with blood and other bodily fluids, people with conditions that may require blood transfusions, individuals with multiple sex partners, people who use needles for health reasons, and for drug use are all recommended to receive the vaccine, the hepatitis B vaccine, which is routinely given to babies right after birth. And I mentioned my own personal opinion about the logic of doing so. Treatment of hepatitis B is with the antiviral drugs lamivudine. It is a slow treatment where approximately 20% of the patients respond in the first year. 15 to 30% of the patients develop drug-resistant mutations of the virus. So we must remember that viruses mutate very rapidly and have their own survival mechanism, which can outpace any kind of vaccine we can dream up in the lab. Interferon is a mixture of proteins that our body makes in response to viral infections and is used to simulate an immune system response to hepatitis B. The drug is injected subcutaneously in a course of 5 million units daily or 10 million units three times a week for 16 weeks. Of those infected with hepatitis B,
20 to 30% respond beneficially. So there is another risk-benefit ratio in terms of getting that course of treatment. There's no vaccine for hepatitis C. As I said, the vaccine mutates very quickly and very frequently. Conventional treatment for hepatitis C includes the use of the interferon again, ribavirin to remove the virus from the liver, and the long-term results right now are variable. Okay, so what happens when you get a hepatitis B vaccine given to children and teens? You can see fatigue, loss of appetite, lingering cough, itchy skin, depressive moods, and cases of diabetes. Vaccines compromise the immune system, and we might see diabetes, Guillain-Barré syndrome, arthritis, demyelination of the nervous system, anaphylaxis, or adverse reactions to hepatitis B. It looks like we're out of time, and so I'm going to get off the show now, and folks, maybe we'll talk about a homeopathic treatment a little bit more in the next show. So thanks so much for tuning in.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing.
Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com.
But wait, there's more.
You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com.